And a happy Wednesday to you. I'm Sharon Dale. I'm here with my co-host Jonathan Sinclair, and you're listening to your favorite show on Cliff Central. It is Animal Central.
Yes, it's definitely our favorite. I know that. And it's such an exciting show today.
We do. We have lots of, we got comedy clips. We've got a little bit of news on Cecil the Lion, which was tragically hunted by a dentist from the United States. And then we've actually got Dean Bush from Greyhound, the Greyhound Rescue Group, in studio with one of the most beautiful greyhounds you've ever seen. Red is in the studio with us. And then we're talking to Candace Ristick, and she is from the Chicken Rescue and Rehabilitation.
Yes, now this is something we've never really spoken about on the show.
No.
It's chickens. And I know her motto is sort of chickens as pets, not food.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Well, let's get started with some news. I know you mentioned the Cecil the Lion story. And this story has really gone viral.
Yeah.
It's gone worldwide. And people are really outraged.
Yes.
That this American dentist comes to Africa. He went to Zimbabwe. And he killed this sort of national treasure, this beautiful lion.
Yes.
That was just doing its thing.
I know. It's just so, so sad, Jono, to think that this can still happen. And I was having a look this morning on the International Animal Rescue Foundation World Action. They are actually calling for him to be extradited back into Zimbabwe, where he can be tried.
I totally agree with
yeah.
that. In the clip that we're about to play you, you'll hear him defend himself and saying that he did it legally. And
there's no excuse.
There is no excuse.
No excuse.
Well, let's check it out. This sound is courtesy of USA Today.
The only activity at River Bluff Dental was outside with a shuttered front door.
And we believe at River Bluff Dental that working with a patient one-on-one for a number of cosmetic reasons.
No sign of Bloomington dentist Dr. Walter Palmer at work or at home. Here he's pictured with a lion from a past expedition. But the recent killing of a treasured Zimbabwe lion named Cecil has sparked international outrage, making the hunter the hunted. Zimbabwe leaders say Cecil was shot by Palmer with a bow and arrow outside a national park. The Safari Association there said Palmer paid for the hunt, and with two local guides, the lion was baited to leave a protected park and killed in an area not approved for hunting. In a statement, Palmer said, "I had no idea the lion I took was a known local favorite, was collared and part of a study until the end of the hunt. I relied on the expertise of my local professional guides to ensure a legal hunt. Again, I deeply regret that my pursuit of an activity I love and practice responsibly and legally resulted in the taking of this lion."
Yeah, you know, he makes all the excuses, but in my opinion, there is no responsible hunting.
Yeah, I don't care how legal it was.
No, and this lion was decapitated, he was skinned, and, you know, I also just want to say there's so many airlines that are now not going to transport hunting trophies, except, of course, our own SAA. They will. So, you know, it all ties in together. It's got to stop.
I'd love to know what goes on inside the mind of these humans that get joy out of it.
Yeah.
Not even the killing part, the after part where you're standing on top of the lion and you're taking photos and smiling. What is the joy in that?
Well, I suppose they get a lot of macho pleasure out of it to kill something like that beautiful. But yeah, let's hope there are repercussions. I think this man's going to have a very difficult life from now on because he's been named and shamed worldwide.
Well, this is what I'm pleased about is his social media page on Facebook. He's been getting death threats and people are very unhappy. His business is closed down for the time being. And I think rightfully so.
Absolutely. But sadly, Jono, it's just because this was Cecil. This goes on all the time.
Exactly.
I've seen pictures of Donald Trump's son hunting in Africa with lion trophies, you know, and nothing said about that. So it's just a very sad situation. I was glad to hear this week that the Lion Park are going to be moving to other premises and they're going to stop cub petting because they're worried also that people have been sort of suggesting that they're involved with cane hunting. So I'm very glad to hear that. But, yeah, very, very sad for Cecil.
Well, let's see what happens. We'll bring you that story as it happens and as it develops. We won't let it go. And then, Sharon, there's another sensitive topic that's been in the news this week, and that is of the Denmark. They have sort of changed their laws, and animals are not allowed to be killed in the style that halal animals would be killed anymore. Apparently, the animal in halal needs to be conscious when you kill it. Denmark has now sort of changed that law to ensure that animals have to be stunned and unconscious when you kill it.
Oh, good.
But this really does pose sort of challenges for the Jewish and Muslim communities in that country. So we've got another little clip. This sound is courtesy of Struan Purdy. Let's check it out and see what we think.
A new Danish law requiring animals to be stunned prior to killing has sparked outrage, with headlines claiming it constitutes a ban on halal meat. The change makes it illegal to slaughter an animal without first knocking it unconscious, either with a blow to the head or an electric shock. However, some claim this new law will violate Islamic halal customs, which requires animals that end up here to be killed by slitting their throats with a very sharp knife. Although the law was intended to reduce animal suffering, those selling halal meat here in Denmark say the coverage has sent the wrong message.
People come and talk, custom and say, it's halal. Are you sure it's halal? All the media say it's not halal more in Denmark.
Although it's caused Muslims here to question whether their meat is actually halal, the new law will have little effect on the Danish meat industry. This is because stunning has been common practice here for over a decade now, with Danish Islamic leaders deeming it perfectly acceptable.
If you just hit it in the head and firstly after cut it like according to the halal way, this way is also correctly.
While stunned meat has always been considered halal in Denmark, some Muslims in other countries don't accept the practice. Abu Bilal says media coverage of the new Danish law has caused a lot of misunderstanding.
Sure. Yeah, that's quite a debatable issue.
It's quite sensitive to listen to that.
Yes.
And when I was downloading that clip, you see a lot of visuals and stuff. It really hits home. It's a very sensitive one. I mean, these are people's religious views, but the Denmark government seems to think that animal rights come before religious views.
Fantastic.
Which
hats off to them. That's a good step in the right direction.
Exactly.
But now let's change tact a little bit and let's speak to Dean Bush. Dean, you are from Greyhound Rescue Group. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Pleasure, Sharon.
And for bringing Red with us.
Absolute
with you,
pleasure.
Not with us, with you. We've already done photo shoots out there in the front. What a well-behaved boy.
Yes.
In fact, most of the grounds are like this.
Mm? So gentle
very
and
easygoing,
quiet.
Very loving, devoted.
Yes.
Easygoing.
So where did Greyhound Rescue Group begin? Tell us your story.
Well, I've been involved with dogs for many years, and I've moved back to Johannesburg from Durban. And by default, I got involved with Whippets, which is just a smaller version.
Yes.
And then I got my first greyhound, and through that interaction with various other people around the Whippet Club, etc., began to realize that there was a very big problem with greyhounds in South Africa, as they are around the world.
Mm.
Slightly different scenario around the world in that they are used for commercial racing purposes. But in South Africa, we've got a particular problem where dogs are used for illegal hunting.
Oh.
Some racing does occur
yes.
illegally. But it's mostly illegal hunting practice, which also has a form of a gambling aspect to it.
Okay.
So we try and work with communities and through with other organizations to educate communities about the dogs, their proper care, etc. But it's also a very difficult issue. There's a lot of debate around whether people should be allowed to hunt with dogs.
Mm.
Part of the problem with that is that wildlife populations, small mammal populations, are being wiped out by guys who are hunting them prolifically.
Okay.
So myself and two other ladies, Margot Pino and Rosemary Smith, decided to form a group that was dedicated to the rescue, rehabilitation, and rehoming of greyhounds specifically. And I must say, since in the last 3 years, we've been extremely busy.
Right, I'm sure.
We do this part-time. It's not
yes.
our full-time job. But we've managed to help and rescue and to rehome countless greyhounds, thousands, and change the lives of those dogs.
Yes.
You can't
yes.
rescue every dog, but to one
no,
dog, it makes a difference
makes
to their
a
life.
Makes a huge difference. And tell us about Red. What's his background?
So Red was a confiscation. He came to us through that. So he's been a foster with me, and what they ultimately call a foster failure.
Yes, yeah, I love those.
We've heard many added, of those, yeah.
Added to the family. But we currently do have about 20 dogs up for adoption.
Wow.
We've adopted out in the last 2 months probably about 20 dogs to lovely, lovely homes. There's a lot of misconceptions about greyhounds in that they lean in and people think they need a lot of space.
Yes.
Think that they're vicious or they can bite. In Australia, for example, I know that all greyhounds that are out in public have to be muzzled for some
really?
Bizarre reason because they're not like that at all.
Yeah, that's odd.
So I think it stems from a racing background. So, you know, commercial racing is basically allowed in 8 countries, or it's commercially done in 8 countries around the world, the US, the UK, Ireland, New Zealand, and then in Macau and Mexico as well. Mm. And in about 22 other countries around the world, it's not commercial, but it's done. The problem with that, and as we were talking about cruelty early on about the lions, etc., is that a lot of countries, and I know Australia is recently being exposed for using live lures. So they train the dogs with live animals. So they'll attach a live rabbit or a guinea pig or a possum or whatever it might be in whichever country it is.
Yes.
And they often will break the animal's legs or something it cry. Oh. Which then gets the dog more excited and then it runs after it. And they do this often because a lot of the grounds that they race, you know, they race for about a period of about 3 to 4 years. So the dog gets bored eventually. So they do those type of things to actually get the dog excited and to chase after the lure.
Yes.
Because a ground is essentially a sight hound. It hunts by sight. It's an inherent quality in the dog. To have a high prey drive. So it will chase after something that's running.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, this is exploited in the racing scenario. And we've been in contact and we work to a degree with an organization in America called Grey 2, the number 2, K, USA. So grey2kusa.org. They've been instrumental in America in closing down a lot of the racing tracks. In fact, I think there's only 21 racing tracks left in America. It's not a viable business anymore. They're closing down at a rate of knots. People are just not interested. Mm. And there's a lot of cruelty involved in racing, whether it be from a drug point of view, they're confining the animals in small cages, injuries, breeding, cruelty cases.
And you were saying in some cases they killed if they don't win.
Absolutely. So at the moment, in fact, it's a very hot topic. It's on Facebook. It's all over at the moment. Macau in China, the island of Macau, which is a Portuguese colony originally, is a big gambling area. And they have a place called the Canidrome where they race greyhounds. Now, all those greyhounds come from Australia. They're imported from Australia. Not one dog ever leaves alive.
What?
They basically will eliminate the dogs in every race. The dogs that don't make the top three in each race then get eliminated, and the dogs are culled. Now, you just have to Google ground racing in Ireland as an example, and it is absolutely shocking and atrocious what they do to these dogs. So most grounds are tattooed in their ears when they're puppies. In Ireland, for example, what a lot of these places will do for dogs that are no longer able to race or that they don't need or don't want anymore, they'll literally chop their ears off and then kill them in the most inhumane ways, you know, either just
because they can't make the money anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll kill them in a cheap way. You know, they're not going to use euthanasia because it costs money. They've uncovered mass graves and all sorts of things. So it's really not an industry that's being supported and is not attended by the public anymore. You know, the more and more people have got informed, they really don't want to be part of this anymore.
Yeah. Good. You see, if you hit this industry in the pocket, because this is all about money making, whether it's dog fighting, dog racing.
So luckily in South Africa, you know, dog racing was introduced to South Africa in the 1930s, and in 1949 it was made illegal, basically on the premise around the gambling aspect of it.
So is it illegal
right
now?
It's still illegal.
It is illegal.
Last year there was an attempt to make it legal again. Luckily, the organization that I mentioned previously, Grey2K USA, they lobbied and lobbied along with us and a whole lot of other groups against it. And the government, thank goodness, or the Department of Trade and Industry listened and decided against it. The problem with that is, you know, it's money related. So you would have had an absolute prolific breeding scenario going on in every backyard
for people
trying to breed greyhounds for racing.
It's the ripple effect.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm.
And Dean, I have to ask you, is there any part of this beautiful dog that enjoys the racing?
Look, they do.
If it was done in the right way.
I know in places like Holland, for example, they actually have tracks where families go with their dogs on the weekend and they run them for pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a hot topic in South Africa at the moment. I know the SPCA has had issues with husky and sledding and all that type of thing. So, you know, there's a very fine line between gambling or not gambling, whether it's right or wrong. It's a difficult point of view to take.
Yeah, as soon as you get money involved again, and then you start getting, as you say, the breeding and the inhumane.
So, greyhounds, as I said, are sighthounds. They're built for speed. They've got laid-back ears. They've got a very deep chest. They've got a long tail for balance.
They're very streamlined. Yes. They look like they're built to run.
They are, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So that's what they're built to do.
Do they need a lot of activity, a lot of exercise?
So contrary to popular belief, they actually don't need that much space. So a greyhound is not a dog that needs constant
exercise. It's not like a
border
collie.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
So they can do well in a smaller environment. They do need to be taken out and exercised like any other dog would be.
Yes.
And in fact, most of the time, they're very, very happy to lie on the couch and watch you.
We saw that.
Yes. Yes.
They definitely have an ability to understand the luxuries in life, like, such as a couch or a bed.
Yes.
We do have a saying. In fact, we've got a little fidget maker we've made called Adopt a Greyhound and Lose a Couch.
Yeah, we saw that earlier because we had Red spread out over our couch, looking oh so comfortable.
Yeah, he really makes himself at home. It's fantastic. But I think the problem is when these animals are seen as commodities and not as sort of living beings.
Yes.
I don't mind if people want to race dogs, but then it's all those aspects of cruelty that come in, and the dog doesn't win, or like you say, breaking a rabbit's leg to get
disgusting.
The dog to that is terrible.
So look, we try and educate communities that keep the dogs. The dogs are kept in very confined conditions. I know that your next guest is talking about chickens. But it's like a makeshift chicken coop where they keep the dogs. In fact, we're busy working on a scenario in Kagiso at the moment with a guy who's in prison, and there's a whole lot of dogs there that are in very bad condition. So it's basically educating people. They need to vaccinate. These stupid things, as an example, as the guy's using Jay's fluid as a tick and flea treatment.
Oh.
The problem with that is that it's toxic. So it causes liver damage and kidney damage because it gets absorbed by the skin. The guys cut the ears in the belief that if they bleed the ears, the flies are not going to, attach themselves to the ears. So a lot of our dogs have got slashed ears. So it's educating people. And, I've had many debates with people where I've explained, not every dog in a township environment is in a cruel situation. A dog in Santon that's sitting behind a fence running in circles because it gets no attention and not walked is just as cruel.
Oh, yes. We've heard this week a lot of cruelty, and some of them have come from very high income areas.
Absolutely.
So money doesn't buy compassion.
Absolutely.
Mm-mm.
Definitely so we do what we can, and as I said, we make a difference in a lot of dogs' lives, and it's really about educating. And then, my dream is to open up a greyhound shelter eventually that's dedicated to greyhounds and to do a lot more work with people in terms of educating and going out there.
And Dean, do you focus only on greyhounds or also whippets? I don't know if Salukis, would they also fall in that group?
Salukis, wolfhounds, deerhounds, all those type of dogs all fall under sighthound group. And we don't focus specifically on those other breeds, but we will get involved with them when we need to. So Italian greyhounds, whippets, Salukis, etc.
Okay, so now this Red is a greyhound.
Yes.
An Italian greyhound is smaller.
It's a miniature, yes.
Ah,
it's a miniature. And then the whippet is an intermediary size, which is more suited to a smaller environment, a townhouse, etc.
Yes. Okay.
But very much the same temperament.
Well, this is why just meeting him, he's so calm and so relaxed and so chilled. Are they good pets to have with children, other dogs?
Absolutely. Greyhounds are companion animals, so it's not a guard dog. It's not a dog that should be kept outside. It's very much part of the family, wants to be where people are, and they often do very, very well, and they prefer their own company, whether it's another dog or another greyhound. They love being in a group situation.
Yes.
So hounds can often be kept beagles are used as well overseas for hunting, etc. But they can be kept, a lot of dogs together with no problems. So you couldn't have 10 Labradors or 10 German Shepherds, but you could easily have 10 greyhounds with no problem.
Well, they do have benefits. I mean, they have short hair, which I don't know. How do you find that? Because you say they're
very easy.
They couch dogs.
So they don't shed a lot.
No, not a lot at all.
Okay.
And what I found out today is they're hypoallergenic. So if you're allergic to dogs, you can have a greyhound.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Now, you mentioned hunting. I know there's also been controversy around that because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that hunters will invite people with hunting dogs onto their properties to come and hunt the small little critters that are destroying their crops. Doves, birds, that
jackal.
Sort of, that sort of thing. Is that what you mean by hunting?
That is true. So there are a lot of farmers in South Africa who believe that these dogs are working dogs, and they use them as such to control problematic animals in problematic is inverted commas.
Yeah, right. Right.
And then you've got the organized hunts where you have so-called taxi hunters who will then go with dogs. They'll go from Joburg to KZN. They'll cut a hole in a fence on a farmer's farm, and they'll let the dogs loose, and they'll use it as a form of a gambling thing. So the first dog that catches something, that guy gets the money. The problem is that they are wiping out small mammal populations in many areas. So, you know, the dogs are very efficient at killing. And, you know, I think we've got to look back historically, and local indigenous people have always hunted with dogs, but more the Afrikaners type dogs.
Yes.
And what the owners were realizing was that if they bred them with a sighthound, such as a greyhound or a wolfhound or a saluki, that they would have a much more efficient, larger dog that was able to kill and catch prey. And that's what's happened over time. So it's an organized situation. The guys know what they're doing. There's a lot of money involved. And the dogs are moved up and down between us at various places, you know, Northwest Province, Limpopo, KZN, all over the place.
Okay. Now, what about as a, let's call it a working dog, what we're going to be doing in Canine Zone is we're going to also be looking at people who enjoy agility, tracking, you know, that sort of thing with their dogs, obedience, show dogs. The greyhound, I mean, are they good at agility? Is it something, obedience work, something that you could get involved with?
They have a mind of their own.
How easy are they to train?
They're not easy dogs to train. So okay. They're not like a German shepherd or border collie that you could train. But they can, look, it depends on the dog, obviously. Mm. I've got some dogs that are very big running dogs. They love to run and that's what they want to do. And then I've got other dogs that don't want to run at all. So I think it depends on the personality of each dog. But they're not that trainable. But very easygoing, laid-back dogs. You know, the grounds are dogs of kings and royalty. In historic times, you weren't allowed to own a ground unless you were a royalty or a king. So I think over time, you know, I think apparently that's where whippets come from, is that they were bred, the smaller grounds were bred slowly into a smaller dog.
To make them smaller.
That peasants and normal people could use for their own.
Yes.
And they were small enough to hide in a coat, you know, to be carried.
Because I've always, like, even now with Red, I've always thought when I've looked at a greyhound, the word serene. They just seem so serene and regal. Yes.
Very, very calm.
Absolutely.
Mm. So I have a number of dogs at home, and I mean, often my visitors to my house will cannot believe that, you know, I have a number of dogs because everybody's so calm and just lying around, but that's really what they want to do.
How many do you have, Dean?
So I've got about 12 dogs at home.
All greyhounds?
Yes.
Okay.
All in your house.
In your house? On your bed?
On the bed.
My goodness.
How big is your bed?
It's a king size bed, and quite funny enough, last night I had to squeeze myself in between.
Well, it's funny, in South Africa, though, you don't see many people with greyhounds as pets. I'm just thinking of my friends and my family. Mm. I've never known anyone to own a greyhound.
You don't see them that often, but it's becoming more commonplace, absolutely. Mm. So we walk our dogs often at Emerentia and Delta Park in Johannesburg. You know,
all
surrounds.
Of them? Do you take them all at once?
Yes, I try to take
them. That should be a sight to see.
So in fact, I did the 702 walk on Sunday with eight of the dogs. And it always gets people talking because, you know, the dogs are very well behaved and walk, but that's what they do. You know, it's to raise awareness. You know, that's what we do it for.
No, and you were just saying you got 20. Is it 20 up for adoption?
Yeah, we've got a kenneling facility where we kennel the dogs that we get in, and you know the dogs are walked every day. They're given lots of love and attention, and we've adopted out quite a few dogs from there. But we've probably got about 20 dogs left that do need homes. So if anybody is interested,
yes. Mm. And then how does that work? Would they come through, meet with you?
So what we do is we've got an adoption application form just to get some info, and then we'll do a home check, and then the dogs are sterilized, they're vaccinated, dewormed, microchipped, everything is done. We do ask an adoption fee to cover costs because, you know, we raise our own funds. But, you know, if people are unable to pay an adoption fee due to economic circumstances or whatever else, you know, we're quite happy to waive that. I'd rather the dog have a home.
Yes, have a good home.
And when you go to this home check, are there any specific things according to this breed that you look for?
Yeah, so I think definitely one is, you know, perimeter fencing, so the dog can't get out.
Are they jumpers?
They're not really jumpers, but, you know, the dogs can be stolen. It is a problem with these type of dogs being stolen. That is a problem. And then just things like swimming pools, or if you've got other type of dogs, children, etc., just to get a feel of what the scenario is, you know. So if somebody had a male dog that was quite a difficult dog, or more of an alpha dog, then you know you want to pair it up with a female, as an example,
right.
possibly.
Right.
And just our types of breeds, you know, you're not going to look at a home where maybe somebody's got two or three staffies or pit bulls. You know, it's not a good match with a greyhound.
It counts me out.
Look, it depends. I'm just saying, you know, it depends on the scenario.
Yeah, you take.
So you've got to get a feel of it,
right? Mm. Right.
And to understand the family and their needs and that type of thing.
So now your dogs that you have, what did you say 20? 12?
No, I've got 12.
You've got 12. Yes. Are they all foster failures?
No, and some of them are own dogs that I've rescued out of various situations and decided to keep for myself, and then there were one or two fosters, yes.
Okay. So you don't, if you have kennel facilities where people can go and help?
Yes,
or
we use a facility that we pay for, but you know, the kennels are quiet most of the year except for busy times such as Christmas and Easter, so they're empty. So, you know, we pay a nominal fee to them, and then at least it keeps the kennels going and the dogs can be kennelled there.
And Dean, I know most of the shelters, they have to do their own fundraising.
Yes.
Can people who are listening, how can they help? Can they volunteer? Can they donate? Do an SMS line? What do you do?
So at the moment, we are finalizing our NPO number, which is a big important step to take in terms of raising funds, where people then can claim it back, people who donate from tax and that type of thing. So we've got a Facebook page that people can contact us on, Greyhound Rescue Group SA. And we're quite happy for people to contact us, to come out to the facilities where we've got the dogs to look at them, even if they want to help.
Yes.
Donations are always welcome. You know, everything is above board. We can, you know, people can see what we do.
Because, Dean, I would imagine just looking at them, they're so slender. Do they feel the cold particularly?
They do. In fact, Red has to have his coat on every morning because he can shiver.
Yes.
So, I mean, I've got one dog at home particularly who will wake me up 3 or 4 times an hour to tell me his blanket's come off and I need to cover him up again. So they do feel the cold. Yes. Absolutely. But then, that being said, I've got one or two older grounds that are real old hunters and are quite happy to lie in a hole in the sand and are not interested in a blanket. So it depends on the dog, you know. A lot of them have very, very difficult
lives.
What's
their lifespan, Dean?
I'd say between 10 and 13 years old.
Okay.
That's pretty average.
Yes.
It's a good lifespan, yes.
So if you think of dogs that are used in a racing environment, you know, they only race till about 4 years old overseas and then they've got to be fostered or adopted out.
Yes.
Most of them aren't. You know, in America alone, since 2008, I think the... in America, they had 80,000 greyhounds have entered the racing industry since 2008. I mean, the figures are absolutely staggering.
80,000.
And you wonder what happens to all those dogs.
Because they all can't be winners.
Exactly, exactly.
No. And Dean, do you also have a problem with backyard puppy mills?
Yes, absolutely. There are indiscriminate people all over the place. So there are definitely people who are indiscriminately breeding and supplying. And then there are people who are willing to pay the price.
Yes.
So it all, as I said, it all revolves around the money aspect again, because there isn't a gambling aspect even with a hunting.
Yes. It always comes back to money, it seems, hey? But now, are there any genetic conditions that they are predisposed to?
Not really. They do say that if the world ended and dogs were left to their own devices, that they would eventually all become the greyhound type of dog.
Really? Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, even the vets that we deal with, you know, the greyhounds are very hardy. They don't often suffer from some of the ailments that other dogs get. So they don't have hip dysplasia issues or any specific issues like that.
Okay, that's interesting because you'd think they're quite a big dog.
They do need specific anesthetics, though. If they have an operation or put under anesthetic, they need a special anesthetic because they have a very, very low fat content and then they're very thin skin. So they do differ from other dogs to that. And then they also use blood donors.
Oh, really?
Yes, so canine blood donors. They have a blood type that is specifically used for that.
That can be used on other dogs. And you were saying earlier that Dr. Sheila Hahn was instrumental in getting Red.
Yes.
She is, Jono, she's a veterinarian based here in, is it Blobosrand?
Yes.
What an amazing lady. She's part of COSANC.
COSANC, that's her.
Which rescues her cats. She actually neutered my boy. I drove all the way from the West Rand to her because she was the only one who could deal with my boy, and she's the most amazing person.
In fact, I have another two dogs from Sheila, mother and son, funny enough.
Okay. Yes. I'd love to get her in. It's always difficult for the vets, though, because they're busy during this time. You know, so you've got to try and get them when they're on leave or something like that. Yeah. But Sheila Hahn is a true animal
angel. I think just in terms for the public, you know, there's a lot of organizations doing brilliant work. The likes of Claw.
Yes.
The likes of Fora. Yes. The likes of Pets. you know, the vets like Sheila Hall, and there's a lot of people, and I mean, and shelters are full to the brim.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, rescue breed specific rescues like ourselves do help alleviate that pressure on some of these rescue organizations that are full to the brim with dogs. Mm. It's actually it's heartbreaking.
See, and I think people don't realize there are breed specific rescues. Yes. So, you know, if you want a Rottweiler, you can get
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely.
You know, go to the Rottweiler Rescue yes. organization. So there's no need to buy from puppy mills or pet stores.
And there's a big movement to stop you know, pet stores selling live animals.
Mm. Well, Sharon, no, I know, is very
passionate
about
very behind
that.
So. We had Smaragda Lowe in a while back from Ban Animal Trading. She is doing amazing work as well.
Yes.
And it's starting to filter down. I see less and less and less.
There are less. There are less.
Definitely
you
less.
You know, I'm involved with parrots as well to a small degree.
Oh.
And I mean, I also see it with that, you know, there's still lots of birds coming from the Congo, African greys, etc.
Oh, Dean, we need to get you back into a separate subject on parrots.
That's a whole different subject.
We haven't spoken about that yet.
We were saying the other day we want to look at that. Mm. But we will stop talking about it now, and we'll make another date with you.
A whole other conversation.
Yes. Dean, so again, how can people get hold of you if they want to adopt one of your babies?
So at this point in time, our Facebook page is probably the best. I can give a cell phone number out if that's...
Yes, please do.
So the cell phone number is 083-303-6358, and that's my own personal cell phone, Dean.
You're going to get all these ladies phoning in.
Oh, goodness.
Okay, and website?
Our website is still under construction.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think Facebook is the best.
Fantastic. So there you go. If you are looking to adopt a greyhound, you know who to call. And we'll be right back after this short break.
And it was the second time 1 month. So I said, that is it, man. I'm getting these birds back. Let me tell you, you got to stand outside for a long time with your pants down like this before a bird comes randomly flying through. I did. I waited it out, right? Took about 2 days. Finally, a sparrow comes whipping through. Boom, I nailed him, right? Flipped him on the wing. He spun off and hit the curb. I was like, yeah, wash that off, my friend. It's very satisfying. Very satisfying indeed. So because of that, I've decided to get all the animals back for the things they're doing to us. Oh, yeah, man, I'm out there. I'm humping dogs' legs, huh? I'm ignoring cats, sure. I'm sucking the blood out of mosquitoes. You're going to be itchy in the morning, my friend. I'm baffling the Sasquatch with a blurry photo of myself. I'm selling whale CDs of me making annoying noises and passing it off as music. I've got a pet now. I've never had a pet before. I got a cat. And I was very concerned because I got a lot of germ issues. And friends tell me, don't worry, Roman, cats are very fussy when it comes to hygiene. Right? But my cat likes to lick its own ass and drink out of the toilet. If you ask me, they're not fussy enough. I'd say that's rather carefree when it comes to hygiene. What do you say? Cats are more like risk takers. If I sat around licking my ass all day, you wouldn't call me fussy. Heck, you wouldn't call me at all. And that'd be fine because I'd be licking my own ass. What do I want to talk to you for? Besides, how do you hold the phone? You know what I'm saying?
CliffCentral.com.
And we're back, and this time we're going completely the opposite from canines. We're going to chickens.
Yes.
And we've actually got Candace Ristic in studio. She's the founder and director of Chicken Rescue and Rehabilitation South Africa. And I just want to mention that if you ever have questions, please, you know, send us a message, phone in, Skype us, anything like that, because we like to get that interaction.
Yeah, for sure. 0861-555-189. Or, of course, the most popular way to contact us is our WeChat message to screen. We see it instantly.
Yeah, we're looking at it all the time.
It's right in front of Sharon.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking at it all the time. Come on, speak to me. Okay. Candace, thank you so much for coming in today. And we're talking chickens. So let's start at the beginning. What do you do? What does your organization do?
Well, firstly, thank you so much for having us here today. Our organization does a few things. We look at the cruelty inherent in the production of chickens.
Yes.
That's both meat and eggs. And we sort of fight that on a legislative level. We rescue chickens coming out of the production industry. and look to rehome them with people who are wanting egg producers in their lives, maybe a few backyard chickens, and give them a better life and a free-range life. And then we also work with a lot of the informal traders to ensure that the chickens that sit in the informal settlements on the weekend have a quicker end and a more humane end, and that they also get food and water while they're waiting backyard slaughter.
I mean, I always feel so sorry. I was watching a movie the other night. It was set in China, and you see on the street, on the road sides, you can come there and ask for a chicken, and they literally pull one out of a tiny little crate and chop its head off. I mean, they've always seemed to, I don't know, people don't see them as a sentient being in a way. They're food.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we're fighting, is that they're not seen as sentient beings. It is very commonplace to eat chickens. The slaughter of chickens, or the legislated slaughter of chickens, is in itself commonplace, but incredibly cruel. So I think that poultry have quite a raw deal.
Yes, they do.
And, that's our chosen area of work. Yeah.
So in this country, Candace, when we're talking about chicken farming, is it done humanely? What are the problems out there? I mean, people will say eat free range because that is a better way to go. Is that true?
It's very controversial. There's two sides to the chicken industry. The one is the egg production. There's one meat production, and they're two very different industries. The production of meat, the chicken that is identified or that has been genetically modified in order to grow fast enough for the meat industry is called a broiler. Mm. And a broiler is genetically modified to go from naught to slaughter in approximately 5 weeks.
You mean from the egg to being slaughtered? 5 weeks?
5 weeks. So the acceleration of growth is massive.
Is that done artificially?
It's a genetically modified process that started in the 1960s and is getting more efficient, unfortunately. So they bred for bigger breasts, they bred to grow very quickly, and that in itself is an extremely uncomfortable process for that chicken. And I think what people don't understand is that when you buy a supermarket chicken, regardless of whether it's free range or not, you're eating a baby chick. It's a five-week-old chick with the psychological development of a five-week-old chick. It should be. So although it's large and it's a 1.2 or 1.5 kilogram chicken, in fact, more, it's probably a 2 kilogram chicken, it's actually a baby. And, you know, you get ligament issues. They often can't stand by the time they get to slaughter date because
they've
grown so fast. They don't lay down proper muscle. They don't lay down proper tendons. They have heart issues. They go into organ failure. So, you know, we take on broilers every so often, but they're quite intensive from a rescue perspective, from a resource perspective.
And, I have a question. If they're so genetically modified and I don't know what they use on it, that is also what you are consuming.
Absolutely. And if you take a five-week-old broiler and you feel it in comparison to a chicken that's run around, that's not a genetically modified chicken, you're eating a lot of fat. That meat is very fatty. It's not I can't believe it's a good amount of protein.
Candace, we've got someone who's been waiting on the line to ask you a question for quite some time.
Sure.
Yes. Hi, Judd. Can you hear us?
Judd, are you there? I think we kept Judd on the line too long. Judd, you there?
Sorry, Judd.
Okay.
Okay, I think he needs to call back.
Yeah, I think he ran out of airtime. He was waiting on the line for so long. We'll get him back.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. So I mean, free range, they're saying to us that these are chickens that can run freely out there and they're all happy and contented until their heads are cut off.
Well, the problem with free range in terms of meat production is that those broilers are very tied to the food bowl because of their accelerated growth. So they don't really use the space that is given to them. And the space, it's a misnomer. There's very little space given to them. They're not in cages. They are in a barn. So that was never the issue around free range chicken. But it's certainly not a situation where they're living out in a field enjoying life, and 5 weeks
in a
later,
lovely pasture.
And the slaughter of broilers is very cruel. They're shackled, which means they're hung upside down. They're put onto an electrified
conveyor belt
where their heads kind of they go through a saw. The saw doesn't always, you know, get the head off quickly enough. And they, I know that from the fact that they don't have proper sort of ligament placement, that those legs are dislocated and often broken by the time they go to slaughter. And in fact, what we heard recently is that the city deep abattoir is having huge problems with load shedding. Because they're shackling and then they're having load shedding and they don't have a generator that's large enough to operate the plant. So those chickens are hanging for three or 4 hours before slaughter upside down, which is a terribly distressing situation.
I don't know how anyone could work in a facility like that.
And I suppose, you know, once the electricity goes off, they can't take them down.
Well, they don't.
It's just too much extra trouble work for a human here.
Yeah. We've got Judd back on the line.
Hi, Judd. Can you hear us this time?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Hi there. I believe you've got a question for our guest.
Yes, I've actually got three questions.
Excellent.
Sure.
They don't need to be answered directly, just perhaps if they can be brought up through the show.
Okay.
First one, is there any way that I can coop train my chickens? At the moment, they're actually jumping into a tree and sleeping there, which is slightly problematic for me because I live on the edge of a valley. So they end up jumping into the valley in the mornings and stumble into my neighbor's yards, which is an endless issue for me. The second question I have, is there any kind of specific feed or anything specific I should be doing to encourage my chickens to lay eggs? It's not a major priority of why I got chickens, but it would be an added bonus. And then my third and final question, is there any way that I can train my chickens to be less timid of animals? So that if we go into the coop and perhaps sit there with raisins in our hand or nuts or anything like that, is it possible for them to come close to us and allow us to cuddle them? At the moment, they're a bit skittish, for lack of better words.
So, Judd, I assume you've got some sort of bantam breed, or do you know what breed you've got?
Yes, I actually rescued one. I'm not sure if it is a real breed. It's called a Zulu chicken.
Oh, is it a white and grey? A white and black striped chicken?
Yeah, it's actually a bit more like a brown, multicolored one. And it seems to really enjoy scratching a lot. And then I have another one. Again, I'm not 100% sure of the breed. It's a cuckoo.
A cuckoo.
Yeah, a cuckoo. And that one is more black and white.
Yes, yes. Okay, so I think you've probably got something like a Boschwelder and a cuckoo.
Okay.
In terms of egg production, Boschwelders, if you do have a Boschwelder, are bred for egg production, but they won't be producing a lot of eggs at the moment because it's winter, so that's not a natural time for them to produce eggs. And your cuckoos also produce eggs, but it's a bad time of year for them. In terms of feed, I think often people feed their chickens grain and corn, which is not a good diet for a chicken. It has very little nutritional value. So one needs a good composite laying pellet, which you can get at a co-op or a feed store. You can also do nice warm jungle oats cooked with water on these cold mornings, and you can put in some shelled sunflower seeds. You can put in additional calcium, you know, any of the sort of requirements that they would have. You can also look on our blog page, which is chickenrescueandrehabilitation.com.
I'll definitely do that.
And we've got quite a lot of information on there that you can also have a look at. In terms of trading your chickens are real creatures of habit, and sleeping in trees is the safest place for them at night. And they don't like to be told what to do.
Sounds very similar to my pugs.
Yeah. You could coop them at night, but that would mean you would have to try and catch them and get them to sort of relearn where they have to sleep at night. But, you know, in their natural habitat, they can, or when we had our rescue organization out in the Magaliesberg, I mean, our chickens used to probably walk 2 to 3 to 5 kilometers a day.
Wow.
So they do like to roam if they have the opportunity. The alternative is we can get you some rescue expats, expatriate hens who've been caged for egg production. And, you know, they are fairly institutionalized, so they will be the type of hens that you can cuddle and hold and form a relationship with. And they're fairly compliant in terms of sleeping where they're told to sleep.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm a huge advocate of rescuing.
Thank
you. So that is definitely something I'd like to look at going forward. I will definitely be in touch.
Please, we'd love to give you a few.
No, that's fantastic.
Okay. Thanks, Jared. Hope we answered your questions.
Yeah, 100%. And as always, thank you for an amazing show. It is the highlight of our week.
Thanks, Jared.
Okay, then.
All right, bye. So we're moving on to that. You're saying that you have these chickens up for adoption.
Mm.
Where do they come from, Candace?
So to answer that question, I'm going to need to explain the egg industry a little bit to you. And also I think that gives people context as to what we're actually rescuing. Because quite often when we talk about rescuing chickens, people say, well, what do they need rescuing for? Mm. You know, aren't they okay? And they're not okay. So the egg production side of the industry involves day-old chicks being separated into gender. That's male and female. The male chicks get macerated. That means they are immediately put into a big grinder and used for composite chicken, used for pets mints. And often sometimes they're gassed and they're sold for, to raptor facilities or whatever for food. And the females are then put into a large warehouse where they are raised to approximately 4 months. At 4 months, they then become egg producers. Now, this is a specific type of chicken that has also been geared for egg production. Mm. They don't sit on their eggs. They produce an egg almost every day or every 23 to 26 hours. So, again, it's a modification which is fairly onerous on their bodies.
Yes.
And then they're sold to large facilities. We hope there are three types of facilities. You either get barn-raised in this country, which means that they grow up in a barn with very little natural lighting, often very crammed facilities. Or they're put into battery cages or caged hens, which are cages with floor space no larger than an A4 piece of paper, and 2 to 3 hens are put in there.
Mm-hmm.
And or you get your free-range facilities, which are few and far between, mm-hmm. I might tell you. Where they're genuinely a free range. And from there, they live for approximately a year, where they produce eggs. They have no place to fulfill any of their natural kind of needs or desires or to live a healthy or natural life. At the end of that year, they are then sold either again for pets mints, or for composite chicken.
Why after a year? Because their egg
production goes down marginally. It goes down for about 2 to 3 eggs a week. It goes down and they become what they call spent hens. They're no longer viable. Or they're very often sold to the informal traders who work in Cosmo City in Zandspruit and Alex. With a lack of refrigeration and electricity in a lot of the informal settlements, buying a live chicken is a better way to kind of keep your food fresh until dinner than buying a frozen chicken.
Mm.
And so they then get transported. They have a few days where they're not fed. They're often not given water prior to being sold. They get put into what's called a cull depot, which is like a middleman. And by the time they get to the informal settlements, they've had a pretty rough few days. They've often broken legs. They're handled roughly. They're handling huge quantities of chickens. For example, there's a very small facility out in Muldersdrift of battery hens, which is 86,000 hens.
Wow.
So, and that's considered a fairly small facility. So you can imagine that the quantities that they're moving in a few days, there's little room for handling those hens in any way but as a commodity. And so by the time we kind of get them from the informal traders, they've often got broken legs, broken wings. They've been bashed against, the sides of the cages. They've got neurological damage. And that's where the rehabilitation part comes in.
Yes.
What we take out of the system is a real drop in the ocean.
Really? How many do you have right now?
Well, my flock at home, I mean, I live in a residential area. Mm. So, all of us who volunteer for our organization live in residential areas. So we have between 6 and kind of 15 hens. And what we do then is we look for people to rehome to. We used to hold a huge flock at Magaliesburg, but it was very onerous financially for us.
Right.
There isn't a lot of support for chicken welfare.
And Candace, is it legal? So if you live in a residential area, can you keep chickens? I mean, I would love to.
Yes, you can. You can. There are different bylaws for the different areas. But if your area does allow you to keep chickens, you can keep up to 10 hens. Okay. Roosters so are the problem because they make
noise.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Okay. But you can keep up to 10 hens.
And I mean that if you do that, you are going to get eggs.
For a small family, 10 chickens is more than enough
more
for
than
eggs.
Enough.
I mean, for if you think of two hens producing 5 eggs a week, approximately, you know, you've got 10 yes. eggs a week, which is probably more than the average family buys. I assume most families buy 6
sure.
eggs a week. Or,
and they're easy to take care of. I heard now what you were saying to Judd. Mm. In terms of food, not a costly exercise.
It's not a hugely costly exercise.
So their needs are not a lot. A nice coop to live in and good food, water to drink. Any other requirements that they would need?
They need a lock-up facility at night to keep them safe from sort of residential predators
right.
such as cats or civet or the odd genet that comes into and dogs.
Obviously. Oh, I thought you were talking about the common baddie that goes into properties and steals things.
Well, you never know.
Yes,
right?
yes and humans.
Yes. yeah.
They need a good diet. They need water. They do need a fairly large area. And if they're going to be cooped, we have a minimum requirement as to how big that coop could be. And then they need to be let out, you know, to free range for some part of the day. They are highly social creatures, chickens. They are highly social birds. They are intelligent. Mm. They have the capacity for a much more sophisticated life than they to grow into a much more sophisticated
yes.
life than they offered.
Yes.
I wonder what their lifespan is. I'm sure you know.
Yeah. Well, the production hens probably only about 3 years because they eventually get egg production issues. They've been pushed too far.
Mm.
But a normal, sort of a healthy, perhaps judged chickens would
yes.
probably be 5 to 7 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's not that
yeah.
long a lifespan. No. But they're wonderful. We had neighbors that used to have chickens and a rooster.
Mm.
And it was wonderful
yeah,
waking up
really
to that in the morning.
I really don't mind that noise.
No,
yeah.
it's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's so natural. And I used to look out of our top window and watch them for hours. I could see them in the backyard playing and scratching.
They're
and
very active
awesome.
Animals. Yeah, they're always very, very active. I love it.
And
yeah.
have characters. You
yes.
can actually see the different little personalities in them. But, I mean, Candace, at the end of the day, you know, we're never going to stop – well, we'll try, but we're never going to stop people from eating meat and chickens. If you want to eat chicken, how many – you say there's not many free-range facilities around, but I know you see free-range in Woolworths. I know Checkers is doing it now. Is that the way to go?
You know, it's a really difficult question to answer. We understand the realities of what goes on. We work with it every day, and we understand that you know, we're far from getting people to stop eating chicken, although we did end, you know, not me personally, but as a nation, we ended slavery and many other things. So we hope that we get there one day. But I think that regardless of whether it's free range or not, and I think Woolworths is one of the – are we allowed to say specific names? I think Woolworths is one of the best of the worst in terms of chicken production. They do have, I suppose, what you'd call adequate free range facilities. But I think people need to understand that regardless of where you get your chicken from, it is still a genetically modified baby that you're eating.
Mm.
So, you know, I often have vegetarians, or not vegetarians, but I often have meat eaters saying to me, I won't eat anything that's a baby. So I won't eat lamb and I won't eat veal, but, you know, I'm happy to eat beef. Chickens are babies when they're slaughtered. Mm. That is a broiler with all the psychological needs of a tiny baby.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of their size. So, yeah, I can't really give – it's a difficult answer to give as to whether there's a better way. I suppose one pushes for free range, but it's far from an ideal situation in any way.
No, sure.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, I don't think people realize by eating meat how many – other products you're taking into your system.
Mm,
I mean, there's no evidence, or nobody's ever said whether these are carcinogenic or whether they can do us long-term damage. Antibiotics and
absolutely.
Growth accelerators, hormones, steroids.
Yeah.
This is what we are eating when
absolutely.
We eat meat products.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, it's definitely not. I don't believe chicken in any way is a healthy option if one is to eat meat or white meat, whatever it's called.
Right.
Well, what your organization would like to see is chickens not being food. Is that your your ultimate
I think,
goal.
Isn't that your Facebook? It's chicken as pet, chicken not as pet, food.
Not food. Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yes, I think we'd love to see all animals free from harm and free from slaughter. But we work with the realities of what we've got at the moment, and we are, as I say, we are very far from achieving that in any way worldwide. You know, in terms of egg production, definitely ensuring that you buy free-range eggs. Again, I can tell you the inherent pitfalls and the cruelty involved in that. Eggs are not a cruelty-free industry, regardless of whether they are free-range or not.
Yes.
But it is definitely where we are heading to. On a continuum, it's where we are heading. We want to be on the free-range side rather than
not. If you think about it with a chicken, if you slaughter a chicken, it's one meal. Whereas if you keep it in a good condition and happy and healthy, you've got eggs continually. And we all know how expensive eggs are these days. So people need to look at that. I'd rather have all the eggs.
But I think also in South Africa, chicken is a staple. You know, a lot of people can't afford beef and lamb and all these other things. And chicken is the only option.
It's the cheapest option.
Yeah, so it must be a bigger challenge in Africa, especially.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. And I think the re-education that happens, which we have involved ourselves with at times, it's not an ongoing project for us, but we sort of revisit it every so often, is trying to get people to understand that the protein in your pulses and in your grains are perfect, you know, plant proteins are a perfectly adequate substitute for animal proteins.
And cheaper.
And so much cheaper. I mean, it's so much more bang for your buck to buy a huge bag of lentils or sampan beans or, you know, whatever you choose to eat. But unfortunately, meat is holds status in this country. One is seen, and it's, you know, it's also linked to kind of a kind of machismo, you know.
Yes.
Like it's macho and it gives you strength and it gives you go and, you know.
We just got a joke sent in here by Nathan who says, why did the chicken cross the road? And the answer is to run from KFC.
That's right. That's about it. And I think they would run if they could.
Yes, they would run if they could. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it is a difficult situation. As you say, you know, as John has said earlier, it is well, mind you, it's not that cheap anymore. Chicken isn't that cheap anymore. So I think with our economy right now, I think fewer people are actually able to eat chicken or meat or something like that. Fish is out of the question because that is so expensive. It really, really is. So if people want to adopt one of your little – are they all named? Do they have names?
No, we let you name
them. Okay. So what do you do? Do you do a home check? How does your adoption process work?
Yes. So we have an extensive telephone interview where we get a sense of how this chicken, how, you know, you intend the chickens to live. We offer support in terms of getting set up for having chicken at backyard chickens. And then we do a home check, and then we will either ask you to fetch your chickens on a day that we do a large rescue, or sometimes we will go and help you settle them in.
Oh, wonderful.
And then we offer ongoing telephonic support.
How much space do you need, Candace? You know, I'm thinking about this now, about getting some money. How much space would you need?
It depends how you intend for them to live. So if your chickens are going to be cooped continuously, then you probably need a space of a minimum about 10 by 4 meters.
Okay.
And we would then encourage you to do a lot of environmental enrichment for them to make sure that they had things to do during the day.
Stimulation.
Otherwise, they need stimulation.
Okay.
If you were able to offer them sort of cooping half the day and you were able to let them out for the afternoon, or you were able to let them out for a period of the day, then your coop could be slightly smaller. And then, you know, you could go for a very small coop if you were going to allow them to free range most of the day just for safety.
Well,
really.
Can you let, I'm sure there's many people out there who now want to adopt a couple of chickens. So how do they get hold of you, Candace?
So we have a very active Facebook page, which they can message us on. That's Chickens as Pets Not Food Chicken Rescue and Rehabilitation. And we also have our blog stroke website, which is chickenrescueandrehabilitation.com. So they can get hold of me on there. Otherwise, I can give you my email address as well if you would like
please,
that.
Please.
It's Candy, C-A-N-D-Y, at Discovery Mail, M-A-I-L, Discovery Mail, one word, .co.za. I have a woman who has become a firm friend and a volunteer for us over the last 2 years, and we kind of run the organization now together. Her name is Janine Nash. So either Janine and I will get back to you. And then we've recently hooked up with a wonderful woman called Corlia Smith, who's in George. So she's starting to do work for us in George.
Okay. So we're if you're hoping out there in the Cape, you can also give them a shout.
You can also give us a shout.
Well, that's fantastic. Candace, thanks so much for coming in. We've learned a heck of a lot today.
You know so much about them.
No, we've learned a lot today. And next week, we'll be back again with some more interesting stories. And remember, if you missed some of the show, you can podcast us. Until next week, give all your pets a hug from us. Bye.
CliffCentral.com.